everyone. Welcome back to the Unexpected Adventures in North Alabama podcast. Joining us today is Jason Wilson, a pioneer in the brewing industry in North Alabama and founder of Back 40 Beer Company. Thanks so much for joining me today, Jason.
Happy to be here.
Yeah. Well, before we jump in, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got interested in craft brewing.
So I'm a seventh generation Alabamian. My family's lived in Gadsden for the last five or six generations, I think. And I graduated high school and moved to Auburn for college. And while I was in Auburn, I kind of picked up this random hobby of home brewing beer. I come from a long line in my family of craftsmen and tradesmen. And so it was really kind of fascinating to me, the idea of, you know, just making something from scratch. And at the time, it wasn't entirely legal to homebrew beer in Alabama. It is now. We were successful in changing that legislation several years ago. But anyway, not unlike a lot of kids in college, I had a brother who lived in Colorado, who was a ski instructor in a town called Crested Butte, Colorado. And so, like most kids who have a brother that is a ski instructor, at Christmas break, me and a bunch of fraternity brothers loaded up and went out and stayed on his couch for free and skied for free and ate all his food. And, you know, but one night we were there and he took me to a small little brew pub in the town of Crested Butte. And that was really my first exposure to real craft beer. And this was late 90s. And I just remember trying one of the beers and going, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And some guy sticks his head out from behind a fermenter and says, thank you. And so I ended up well into the evening sitting on a keg in the brew house asking questions and just totally enamored with the art and the craft of making beer. And it was really interesting because it's something that stuck with me. He said, we don't make beer because it's cool to make beer. We make beer because the Budweiser trucks can't deliver when there's 14 feet of snow on the ground during the winter. You know, we're making the beer for this community.
Yeah.
And that was something that was really impactful to me. So I came back to finish up at Auburn. And I was just, from that point, I was just bitten by the bug. And so I started visiting the very few breweries there were in America. There was only about 250 breweries in the United States at this time total. And so I graduated and went to work for Georgia Pacific. And I traveled a lot for that role. I was in Louisiana for a while. I was in Atlanta for a while. And I just got to know these local brewers at Abita and Sweetwater and some of the earlier craft breweries in America. And I was just could not figure out why nobody was doing this in Alabama. And so one day I realized, like most people think you live in the Deep South because you never got your chance to leave. Of course, being from the Deep South, and so much of our story is told at the food and beverage, you know, told at the dinner table with food and beverage, is such a big part of our culture. And another big part of the Southern culture is we're intensely loyal to local businesses and local brands in the Deep South. So I was like, man, the reason none of these other big brewery operations have tried to come into the Deep South is because they think that there's this lack of a palate, you know, for the finer culinary things. And being from here, I mean, I know tons of farmers that wear overalls every day that'll pay $150 for a dry aged bone-in ribeye steak. And so I was like, man, we can do this. We can build a brand around craft beer in the Deep South. It just has to be approachable and not pretentious. And so I didn't have any money to speak of. I was not born in an affluent family. I always joke, I tell people I grew up in a very happy, what I believed to be at the time, middle-class household. It wasn't until I got to college that I realized just how close to the poverty line I really was, you know. So I didn't really have a lot of capital. I didn't really know where to start. And so I just started reading books incessantly from people that had been successful in the craft beer industry. And I read a book by Jim Koch, the founder of Boston Beer Company, Sam Adams. He's actually the first billionaire of craft beer.
Oh, wow.
So I read his biography and I was like, I've got to talk to this guy. So I picked up the phone and called him and spoke to his secretary and got to be really good friends with Miss Teresa. And sure enough, several weeks later, I was walking down Peachtree Street in Atlanta on my lunch break and my phone rang and it was Jim Koch. And he's been a mentor of mine ever since. And so I told him, I said, I don't have any money, but I want to build the first manufacturing brewery in the state of Alabama, essentially since Prohibition, the first packaging brewery. And he said, well, Jason, what I did when I first got started, I didn't have the money to build a brewery either. So I went and found another brewery that would agree to let me come in and make my beer on their equipment after hours while they weren't there. And I said, that's it. That's what I got to do. And so I just picked up the phone and started calling every brewery I could think of within 500 mile radius. And I ended up having a great conversation with Leslie and Mark Henderson, the founders of Lazy Magnolia Brewery in Kiln, Mississippi, home of Brett Favre. And they had just built this massive new brewery and they had a bunch of extra capacity. And so they agreed to essentially leave the key under the mat for me. And so I'd met Jamie Ray, a world-class brewmaster along the way, you know, the good old-fashioned way, sitting on a bar stool at a brew pub. So I called him up and he was retired at the time and was raising horses, like really high-end quarter horses on this farm outside of Montgomery. And I said, look, Jamie, this was like 2008. So we just had the big market collapse. You know, it was a really bad time. I said, Jamie, I can only imagine, you know, that high-end quarter horses aren't flying off the shelf right now. So why don't you come out of retirement, help me start this brewery. And then once we get established and can train some brewers under you, I'll help you get back into the horse business and you can move back to the farm. And he said, okay, you got a deal. And so for 18 months, Jamie and I would leave Atlanta on Friday afternoon at 5 o'clock and make the 7-hour drive to Kiln, Mississippi. And we'd brew beer all weekend. And then I would leave on Sunday in time to get back home and be back at work Monday morning. And we did that for 18 months. And I went out and convinced a local Budweiser distributor actually to be our distributor in the market. And that one Budweiser relationship ended up eventually leading to 27 Budweiser wholesalers in 7 states.
Oh, wow.
And then after about a year and a half, I'd proven the model. We'd had outrageous sales numbers. It was really taking off. We won a silver medal at the Great American Beer Festival in Denver, Colorado. We were the first brewery from Alabama ever to win a medal at the Great American Beer Festival. And so that was enough to convince a local bank to give us our first SBA loan. And that's in 2009, we started construction of our production facility in Gadsden, my hometown.
Wow. That is an incredible story. I mean, from Sam Adams to Budweiser to quarter horses.
It's unbelievable. You know, years later, I ended up serving on the Government Affairs Committee for the Brewers Association of America. And Jim Koch was actually on that committee. Ken Grisman, the founder of Sierra Nevada. Sam Calzone, the founder of Dogfish Head Brewery. A bunch of big-time names in craft beer. And then me, you know, this guy from Alabama. And I used to always joke around, you know, the collective net worth of this room when we're in a meeting is about $13 billion and some change.
Yeah.
And if I leave the room, the collective net worth of this room is about $13 billion. You know, I'm just saying. But yeah, it was awesome. I got exposed and we were early. And that's really what made it so great was by the time we built Back 40, I think we were the 400th brewery in America. And now there's over 8,000.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it's changed a lot.
Yeah. Well, tell us about the origin of the name Back 40. Where does that come from and why did you choose that as the name?
Yeah, well, like I said, it really started with this whole idea of, okay, if we're going to try to present some sort of an elevated brand, you know, it's still got to be approachable and non-pretentious. So we started working on names that would resonate in the Deep South, you know, while still telling our story. And one of the terms that you hear a lot in rural parts of Alabama that I heard a lot growing up is the Back 40. The Back 40 is kind of the 40 acres furthest from the barn, hardest to maintain, hardest to irrigate, you know, on the farm. The Back 40 is just that old land in the very back where the tractors go to die. You know, old rusty cars and stuff. And I love that because the irony of the Back 40 is that if you ever actually do the hard work to plow the land and run the irrigation, it will actually produce a bigger yield per acre than any other acreage on the farm because it's never been harvested. It's nutrient-rich soil. It's primed and ready for production. And a lot of farmers use it as kind of a savings account. You know, if things get really bad, we could always plant the back 40, you know, because we know we'll get a good yield out of that. And so I loved that juxtaposition with where we were in the craft beer industry in Alabama at the time. You know, everybody kind of saw Alabama in the craft beer world as the back 40. You know, why bother?
Yeah.
And so I love the irony of it. It was the back 40 and it was dismissed and overlooked by a lot of big brands at the time. But if you're willing to come in there and do the hard work and establish a market, you can get a bigger yield than most other markets. So that was why we ended up deciding on the name Back 40 was here we go. If nobody else is willing to do this, we'll get out there and, you know, get after it.
Yeah, I love that. It's so very fitting. And being a country kid myself and my family having land of, you know, cotton and soybeans, I totally understand the Back 40. I've heard that growing up.
And it's such a peaceful place too to go, you know, just to go and reflect. I always loved being out in those remote areas. And so we actually at one point did a really awesome ad campaign that was incredibly successful that was, you know, where's your back 40 or find your back 40. And people would send us pictures of these beautiful places that they would go to just kind of clear their head and get away from everything. And for me, that was really what the back 40 was for me growing up was a cool place to be able to just go and enjoy the solitude, you know.
I should send you a picture of my back 40 from back home because there was a creek that was in our back 40 and it was just a very small little creek. And then, you know, there's a little place where there was a cascade and so you could hear the water rushing. And yeah, I'm right there right now. Well, maybe not right now because it's kind of chilly out, but in my mind, it's warmer. What has it been like for you to see Back 40 grow over these years into what it's become?
It's hard to describe. I mean, Back 40's become so much bigger than me now. You know, of course, I'm still the founder and still have a role in the business, but I actually stepped down as CEO a couple of years ago from Back 40 just because I'm, you know, I'm a serial entrepreneur. I'm a 0-to-1 guy.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, I realized, you know, hey, we need a suit in here because this thing's gotten way bigger than me, you know. And so now we have a tremendous team of people that own and operate and run the business day to day. Trip Collins, my chief operating officer, the very first person I ever hired once we got the business going, he now runs our production facility in Gadsden. We brought in Hatton Smith, the former CEO of Royal Cup Coffee, the largest tea and coffee distributor in the United States. So we brought him in as my replacement as CEO. So again, he kind of oversees the production side and our relationships with our franchise model. You know, we in 2017, we entered into our first licensing agreement with a gentleman named Doug Brown to build our facility in Birmingham, which has now been opened for 6 years, I think, and has been incredibly successful. So much so that we actually just opened our second satellite location in Huntsville about 3 weeks ago. That's a beautiful $8 million facility that is going to be fantastic for the Huntsville community there. So it's been surreal. I mean, in addition to that, of course, we'll produce 2-3 million cans of beer out of our production facility in Gadsden, the original production facility there. We have thousands of retail accounts all throughout the Southeast, you know, hundreds of accounts with Publix and Walmart and Kroger and Target and, you know, all that. And then thousands of independent retailers all over the South. So it never gets old. I'll tell you that. I mean, walking into a Publix in downtown Atlanta to walking into some hole in the wall, you know, convenience store on 30A at the beach and seeing your product on the shelf is always a nice feeling for sure.
Yeah, that is so cool. I know I always see it in the grocery store and pick it up from time to time myself. So
yeah,
absolutely. So you've got the three locations. Tell us about your new venture that you started.
Yeah, so when I stepped down as CEO of Back 40, I was 39. 40's always been kind of a recurring number in my life. And so I'd always told myself I wanted to be retired by 40. And so I met that goal. I retired at 39 and bought a Winnebago, and my wife and I hit the road, and then COVID happened. And so we just stayed out there for about a year and went all over the country and had an incredible time. But I kind of had a Forrest Gump moment after about a year, you know, where I was tired of running. Yeah. You know, I'm tired of driving this Winnebago. I got to do something. And so we came back to Gadsden, and I'm a Gadsden city councilman, elected official there in Gadsden. So it was time for me to be back around town so that we could hold our weekly council meetings and stuff. So we decided to come home, and I sold the Winnebago, and I said, I don't know what I'm going to do. I mean, I've got to do something. This is driving me crazy. And an incredible man that I'd had the chance to meet a couple of times before briefly, named Erlen McCorder, who is just an unbelievable philanthropist from the Anniston area, former president of the Auburn University Board of Trustees, has built several facilities on Auburn's campus, several facilities on Jacksonville State's campus with his charitable donations. He owned this beautiful old historic freight house train station in downtown Anniston that had been sitting empty. It was a previous restaurant, pub, brew pub, but it had been sitting empty for 4 or 5 years. And he had kind of poked me a few times about, why don't y'all come down here and do something with this building I got, blah, blah, blah. And so finally he just caught me on the right day, and I came down, and I'm a sucker for old historic restoration projects. And I said, okay, I'll do it. And so that's how myself and Erlen and a couple of other of my friends got together and set out in June of 21 to start the restoration project on this building. And we completed it in January of 22 and opened in February. So we're coming up on our 2-year anniversary here. And, you know, Coldwater is really, I always give this analogy because people don't understand. When we started Back 40, it was a manufacturing facility. I mean, again, it's a plant. And then after passing several pieces of legislation, we were able to open up a small tap room and tasting room in there and started serving a little bit of food. So we have a huge production facility in Gadsden with a tiny little tap room and tasting room, which has grown a lot over the last couple of years. But in Anniston, it's exactly the opposite. We have a giant restaurant here that has a tiny little brewing space, you know, where we make the beer that we serve here on site. We don't distribute any beer from this location. So they're kind of the two exact opposites of one another.
So what inspires you to create your different beer recipes? Tell us about some of your most famous beer and what inspired you to create those.
Yeah, well, I mean, some of them are pretty obvious. I mean, you have culinary inspirations for all around you. Like, for example, our flagship beer with Back 40 is the Truck Stop Honey Brown Ale. And that's a beer that we brew with wildflower honey. And so when I first developed that recipe, I was primarily buying our honey from this apiary out of Mobile, this independently owned beekeeper who basically sold the most of his honey in those little squeeze bears you see at the gas station or at the grocery, you know, on the shelf, just local honey, you know. And so I said, I'm going to call it Truck Stop Honey. You know, it's Truck Stop Honey.
I love it.
And I sent it over to our advertising and design team that we were working with at the time, an awesome group called Mind Vault out of Athens, Alabama. And they've developed some amazing brands in the adult beverage industry all over the country. But they were just incredible to work with. And so I told them, I said, I want to name this thing Truck Stop Honey. And I want it to be like a big old truck stop sign. And they came back to me after a couple of days and were like, Jason, we're all about this. And it's a really catchy name, but you do realize in the Deep South, there's an alternative definition for truck stop honeys.
Whoops.
I really didn't think about it. I'm a sucker for a double entendre. So I said, yeah, let's go with it. And so like Naked Pig. Naked Pig is an American pale ale. The palest animal on the farm is a pig.
Yeah.
You know, Freckle Belly just sounds Southern. You know, it's a guy with a big beer belly. He's like sitting around fishing. And then we had Kudzu Porter And we named it Kudzu Porter because porter is not a very popular style in the Deep South. Really dark stouts and porters don't really sell well in the Deep South, but we made it. And the tagline for Kudzu Porter was, careful, it'll grow on you. You know,
I love it.
It was always just about trying to draw from those Southern roots and tie them into the craft beer. And so,
yeah, that's one thing I love about the craft beer industry is how, you know, there's all these like cultural nods to, you know, the heritage around. So, you know, like some of the breweries in Huntsville.
Yeah, it's hyper localized.
Yeah,
for sure. And if you think about it, I mean, food's the same way. I mean, beer has become such an economic engine for tourism. You know, there are people that will drive hundreds of miles to go to a brewery that they've had before or tried somewhere else before to go to this place. And so if you think about it, just like if you're in New Orleans, you're going to have gumbo and etouffee and beignets from Cafe Du Monde. You know, if you're in Chicago, you're going to have that deep dish pizza. You know, there are these iconic culinary representations of different regions of the country, and craft beer is really no different. You know, there are certain styles of beer that are primarily produced in certain parts of the country. So when you saw breweries really start to explode in the U.S., that's something that was interwoven into the branding of it. We are a hyper-localized brand. We're here to represent this region of the country, and so the names certainly reflect that.
Yeah, I love that. So if someone were to come into Back 40 for the first time, what beers would you recommend them to try?
Well, that's tough because, you know, always it's like asking a parent who their favorite kid is. You probably all have one, but you're not going to say that loud.
And they all have favorites, yeah.
I can tell you this, on any given day, if you walk into Back 40 in Gadsden, most of the staff that are finishing up their shift and sitting down to have a beer at the end of the day are going to be drinking the Naked Pig Pale Ale. And that was my first beer that I ever brewed. I mean, that's my baby. So, but what I always tell people is it depends. It depends on a lot of things. It depends on the weather. It depends on, did you just finish a 5K? Or did you, you know, it's summertime and you just finished cutting the grass? And more importantly than anything, it depends on what you're eating. I tell people this all the time with craft beer. You know, there's a time and a place for light lager. Okay. If you're going to the tailgate or you're going out on the lake all day and you're going to be drinking beer all day, I promise you, it is not a good idea to drink craft beer all day. You're going to be asleep really early, you know? So, but when it comes to having that elevated culinary experience with food and beverage, it really depends on what you're eating. For example, you know, spicy, bold dishes pair really well with hoppy, bitter beers because the hops kind of help cut into that spiciness and it balances out. You know, if I'm having a delicate fish from the Gulf or a shrimp dish, I'm more likely to drink something like a Truck Stop Honey. It's light, it's really subtle, and it complements those flavors in the dish. You know, if you're having a big plate of barbecue, I would be more likely to drink a porter or a stout, you know, because those deep roasted chocolatey malts kind of come out in the toasted flavor and smoky flavor of the meat. So it's really about learning how to pair beer correctly, you know, depending on the situation. And then, of course, one of our more popular specialty beers, the Bamamosa, which is essentially a beer mimosa, a mimosa in a beer can. You know, if you're down at the beach again and you're enjoying some oysters and peeling each shrimp, you know, that Bamamosa is nice. It's light. It's refreshing. It's got a little citrus note to it that complements that lime juice on the shrimp. So,
okay. That's good to know that it's like the wines, you know, your reds, your whites, they go with different things. So,
sure. Well, think about it. I mean,
yeah, keep that in mind.
It's very, very similar. But I mean, well, you bring up wine, a great example. I mean, there are 7 varieties of grapes in the world. Okay. Every wine in the world is made from one of 7 grape varieties. Now, whether it's grown on the north slope or the south slope, or whether it's in high altitude or low altitude, but really the unique nature of wine is in the barrel and how you age it. You essentially have the grapes, and then it's, are you putting it in an oak barrel, a French oak barrel, a white oak barrel, you know, to get these different flavor profiles that develop. And you know, as well as I do, we've all been to wine tastings where they're pairing wine with foods. And sometimes it's a little stretch. You know, sometimes you really have to look for that cherry note or whatever. But with craft beer, that's what I love about it, is there's 86 different varieties of beer in the world. I have hundreds of barley and wheat and rice and oats that I can use as a base of my malt ingredients. And then dozens and dozens and dozens of types of hops that impart flavors. I have so much more flexibility as a brewer. I can actually take a dish that a chef brings to me, which we do all the time, rather than trying to find a wine, a pre-made wine that's going to match a dish, or a chef having to design a dish to match a wine. He can bring me a recipe, and if he can give me 2 or 3 weeks, I can develop a beer that pairs perfectly with his dish. So it's really exponentially more creative when it comes to the brewing process. So yeah, it is very similar to the idea of pairing with wines.
Yeah. That is so cool, though, that you could create a beer based on one dish. That's awesome.
We've done it all the time. I mean, you know, we use many of the same ingredients that chefs use in the kitchen. I mean, you have beers that are infused with coriander and hazelnut and rosemary and thyme. And, you know, I mean, you can really get creative in the brew house.
That is so cool. What would you say in your career as a brewer, what has been the most unexpected thing for you?
Oh, man, there's been a lot. I won't say that I'm surprised at how big the industry's gotten, because I'm not. I totally believed that that would happen. And this is going to be a really geeky brewer thing to say, but the big trend these days in craft beer are like juicy IPAs, as they call them. You see all of these crazy sour beers with infused with these tart fruits and juices and stuff. And all of that stuff would have gotten us run out of the Brewers Association 15 years ago. You know, you just couldn't do that kind of stuff with craft beer and be true to your craft. And nowadays, the innovation is so off the charts now that there's really nothing that's out of bounds. I mean, you see, I've seen people doing, you know, Lucky Charms beers and, you know, like cereal notes into beer flavors. So yeah, the juicy, sour kind of candy craze in craft beer right now over the last few years has been surprising.
Well, before we go, we always ask our Facebook followers what questions they want asked during our episode. And so the winning question is, why are you glad to live and have a business in North Alabama?
Oh, man, I could wax poetic for a long time about that. But, well, it's kind of like what I said earlier, you know, the scenery and the landscape here is so peaceful. It's kind of like a muse to an artist. Just like I said with the back 40, you know, being able to go out and just clear your mind and get into this space, it's incredibly valuable for creators and entrepreneurs and makers to be in that environment, to have so much peaceful, you know, landscape all around you. I mean, you look at Gadsden, for example. We have a beautiful river, the Coosa River, running right through our downtown, slapped through the middle of the city. We have Nocalula Falls, which is one of the largest waterfalls in the state of Alabama. It's over 100 feet that dumps into the beautiful Black Creek Gorge. And then you've got 25 miles worth of mountain bike trails in Gadsden up around our Nocalula Falls Park. And then you've got 20 minutes to the northeast, and you're at Little River Canyon, which is the largest green canyon in the United States. I mean, just unbelievable. Mountain climbing, you know, kayaking, mountain biking, camping. And then you go 20 minutes in the other direction to the southwest, and you're at Horsepins 40, which is some of the most amazing climbing, rock climbing and bouldering you can get. You go 35 minutes north of that, and you're in Gunnersville at Cathedral Caverns, you know, one of the most amazing cave systems that you'll see in the deep south. And then you go 30 minutes south of Gadsden, and you're at Coldwater Mountain Ride Center, the mountain bike center, which is one of the largest mountain bike centers in the United States. I mean, over 60 miles of mountain bike trails. So you're just surrounded by all this ecotourism and outdoor activity, and the people are so hospitable. You can literally spend a whole year going on different weekend trips and never hit them all.
Yeah. Well, you have just planned an amazing road trip in North Alabama. So thank you.
100%.
I should do a blog post about that.
You can head for the cycle. You can start out at Coldwater Mountain Brew Pub in Anniston and go north to the original Back 40 Beer Company in Gadsden and then head southwest to Back 40 Birmingham and then finish up in Huntsville, make the loop.
That sounds amazing. That really does. And you have always been such a really good ambassador for tourism in our area. I know that we've called on you several times to help, and you've always been one to...
It's so important. It's so critical, you know, and that's what I always tell people when I speak to other small business owners. You know, people don't want to, and no offense, I hate to name brands, but people don't want to go to Olive Garden. People don't want to go to Applebee's. People want experiences. They want to know people. And so it's been the best thing that's ever happened to these small towns and small communities all across Northeast Alabama, because people want to hear your story. They want to come to your place and see that authentic individual behind the counter at the storefront or serving their food. And they want to have those authentic conversations. And so it's a really a great time to be in the tourism industry in Alabama, because people are seeking that experience out.
Yeah. And that's one thing when we go up north to shows, you know, travel shows to get people to come down and visit. And the people who have been down to visit, you know, they say, I didn't think there was anything in Alabama. And then we visited and boy, were we wrong. And then the other thing that people would say is that everyone was so nice. They're like, that Southern hospitality is a real thing. And I think, I love those two compliments that, yes, there's amazing beauty in Alabama and everybody's so lovely.
You know, I had a friend in high school that was from Pennsylvania originally, and I would call his house every now and then, and his father would answer the phone, and really, really staunch Pennsylvania Dutch, you know, what would you like to speak to my son about, Jason? And I'd say, well, I'm just trying to get him ingrained in the culture around here. You know, I'm trying to teach him the ropes. You guys, Northerners, you know, y'all got a lot to learn. And he said, his dad would always say this to me, and I've kept it with me for years. He would say, well, Jason, I'm not from here, but I got here as quick as I could.
Oh, I love it. That's great. Well, thank you so much for being my guest today. This has been so cool.
Absolutely. And thank you guys for having me.
Yeah. Well, before we go, tell our listeners where they can find you on social media, Back 40 Beer Company.
Yeah. So the original Back 40 Beer location in Gadsden is on Facebook. We have Instagram, Twitter, just Back 40 Beer Company. And then the location in Birmingham is Back 40 Beeham. The location in Huntsville is Back 40 Huntsville. And then, of course, Coldwater Mountain Brew Pub here in Anniston. We're readily available and easy to find on most social media platforms. So check it out.
And also local grocery stores, restaurants. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, our Back 40 beer is available throughout the Southeast. I mean, Publix, Target, Walmart, Kroger, Winn-Dixie, depending on what your local grocery is, Food City, Piggly Wiggly, you know, any local grocer. And then, of course, lots of service stations and essentially anywhere you go where they serve
truck stops.
Yeah. And truck stops. Anywhere you go, you know, restaurants, bars, sporting venues, anywhere you go where you see Budweiser, they can also have our beer. So even if they don't, you could do us a favor and tell them to order it. So
absolutely.
If they have Budweiser products, they could have Back 40 products because we're on the same delivery truck. So.
Gotcha. Noted.
If you got that local grocery, you know, or if you got a local convenience store that you frequent often, mm-hmm. It's really easy to just ask the attendant if they could order Back 40 beer and they'll get it on the shelf for you.
Sounds like a plan.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah. Thank you for being here. In North Alabama's social platforms are linked in the description. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be back next time with more about North Alabama adventures.